Tonight we bring you the long-awaited part one of episode 7. I know, we started with part 2. But we figured out all the technical difficulties, and now I'd like to present to you part 1 of my interview with Oakspear.
One thing that I definitely want to talk about is, which I never knew about, as I'm the oblivious proprietor of Grease Spot. Belle was telling me about this whole thing where people, when she got caught for sending that envelope or that whatever, I think it was something about abundant sharing or tithing to that girl at headquarters, and then everybody, I guess, from all over the country started sending stuff in to different people. Or something.
Yeah. They she had asked for kind of a flood of stuff to come in so that it would overwhelm the wage EB. That was kind of funny.
I never heard anything about that, which is kind of good. I like the position that I'm in with her.
Well, I was in contact with her for quite a long time. Before she came out, when she was under her previous handles, and kind of me and her and one or two other posters, we were all wanting to get out, and our spouses were wanting to stay in, and then, you know, one by one we started getting divorced. I think she was the last one to hang on in that group. Kind of a mutual support society.
I always look at, all I do is provide a place and people can do whatever they want. That's kind of a nice thing about it.
Well, I tell you, in the early days when I was still in, and even in my first days out of the way, it was people on GreaseBot and the predecessor Waydale who probably literally kept me sane, that there was people that I can talk to, you know, whether by email or private messaging or calling them on the phone, and just go over things in situations that had come up, and just review things and say, okay, I'm not crazy. This really is happening. You know, and Belle was one of those people. Well, and there was seeing some of the things that I was experiencing in print with other people's names attached to them, and being some of the same stuff, like some of the things that leadership was saying, some of the things that they were doing, some of the things that I had kind of written off as an anomaly, or, you know, we got a rogue Way Corp in here, everything will be fine when he leaves, and finding out this stuff was going on all over. Was an eye opener for me.
Yeah, it was something. I know, in my years, I always thought the same type of thing, that it's just this guy or this girl. She's just taking something to an extreme. Never really thought that it was a systemic problem. And I first realized that when I moved from Rhode Island to California, and after a month or two there, I was going, well, these guys are a lot more laid back, but they still have this way of doing things that is very oppressive to the individual.
Well, one of the things that I've seen, I know we've had discussions recently, different threads, and, you know, when all us guys did the round table, we talked about people who have had good times, and other people deny there was ever any good times. I think a lot of times we look at the good times, and they're good because we have chosen to mentally edit out some of the stuff that we knew was a problem. You know, we knew that this leader shouldn't have been doing that. We knew that this thing that Werewolf said in the Powerful Abundant Living class just didn't quite add up. You knew that this doctrine that was being pushed just wasn't biblical, but yet you chose to put it aside because you were getting some kind of benefit. You know, you were either, you know, you either had that circle of people who acted like they loved you or really did love you, or you had answers that you thought you had answers that you never had before. You chose to put it aside. Yeah, I think the flip side of that too is sometimes, you know, things get blown out of proportion because not everything that went on was evil. You know, people tend to edit things into their memories. Oh my God, these horrible things happened, and you know, it's more hindsight than anything else.
They ran out of sugar at a branch meeting. I can't eat, drink my coffee black. What's going on?
Those SOPs. You know, I think that can work. That can work both ways. You know, but I do. When I hear read some of the rosy descriptions of life in the way, and I don't care what era it was, I look at it, you know, kind of, you know, take it with a grain of salt. You know, was it really that good? You know, or is it, you know, you just don't want to admit that you hoodwinked, that you were taken for a sucker. I don't know. That's, you know, that's what I think, but, you know, that's just one man's opinion.
So you got involved in 78, right? Was it?
I got involved in, well, I took the Power for Abundant Living class in March 1978. I actually first heard of the way the previous Christmas, which would have been December 77. I have a cousin who is about a year younger than me, and we used to hang around a lot together when we were in high school and into college. And one of her coworkers was the local twig leader. And he had been witnessing to her and invited her to fellowships. I'm not sure if she had gone to one yet or not, but I was in my cousin's house. We had a two-family home that my family and my aunt and uncle and their kids lived in. And my aunt showed me this Christmas card. And it was pretty much a standard Christmas card. But at the end, it was signed by the twig leader. It said, "God loves you and I do too." Well, I had never seen anybody say anything like that. You know, we were Catholics. We didn't talk about God. And Mom, if you're listening to this, I didn't mean that. you know, my mother is a poster for Greasepot, right? Yeah. So hi, Mom. But anyway, my aunt had requested that I accompany my cousin to one of these twig meetings, just to keep an eye on her, because apparently she thought I was a little more level-headed. And who knows what would have happened if I had refused, but I went with my cousin to a twig and heard things that I'd never heard before. Heard speaking in tongues and heard about they didn't believe in the Trinity and the dead are dead, and it pretty much, I got hit with all of it on the first night. And this was probably right after Christmas. But I was interested enough that I went back. Because I was going through, I think I was 19 years old. I was maybe a sophomore. I think I was a sophomore in college. And I was wanting some answers. I really wasn't satisfied with what I was seeing at church. It wasn't really doing it for me. I was starting to investigate Eastern religion, Buddhism and Taoism and some of the other things there. And so I was ready for some answers. And what impressed me was, true or not, they acted like they had all the answers. And I never really heard anybody who was that confident that they had the truth. So I said, well, all right, if they're that confident, let's see what they got. And they told me they had this class, Power for Abundant Living, which they described to me as a class that would, you know, teach me the basics of how to read and understand the Bible. and kind of a funny story that went with that. I had no idea that this was a national or international or any kind of organization. I thought it was just a bunch of people in an apartment in Rosedale, New York. That's all I thought it was. Well, they're telling me that, well, this class, it's taught by Dr. Werwell from Ohio. I think, okay, got that, Dr. Werwell from Ohio. And then somebody else tells me, well, the class instructor is Jerry from Flushing. And Flushing, of course, is a neighborhood in Queens. So I put this together in my head. Okay, Dr. Jerry Werwell from Flushing, who used to live in Ohio, is going to teach this class. And I showed up thinking that Jerry Werwell was going to be teaching the class. You know, and then we got the cassette tapes, and I figured out that they weren't using the term teacher and instructor interchangeably, and that Jerry was just the guy who stood at the front of the room and said, now, Power for Abundant Living. And then Werwell was the guy who actually taught the class. But went through the class. A lot of it made sense. Some of it didn't. But I was willing to give it a shot. And that was March 1978.
Quite a while ago. Like
1980. I went out as the WOW. I'd actually signed up a year before. I'd signed up in 1979, but I backed out at the last minute. And then signed up again. I'd spent a year living in a couple of different way homes. And I went out.
Yes.
Yes, it was the life of the way home. But, I went out. It was sent to Sidney, Nebraska, which is a town of about 5,000 in the panhandle of Nebraska, about 6 miles north of the Colorado border and about 60 miles east of the Wyoming border, over in the corner. And we felt pretty isolated. You know, after getting involved in the way in New York, where on Long Island you had, I think, 9 or 10 fully functioning branches of 6 or 7 or 8 twigs each, and here I am, and there's the four of us in this little dinky town. And the nearest way people were probably an hour north of us in Scotts Bluff. Oh, it was great.
A little isolated there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was different. But we spent 6 months in Sydney and then 6 months in Kearney. Kearney is closer to the central part of the state, and it's a college town. So that wasn't too bad. There was some way people already living there, and we ran a class there. But in Sydney, the town was pretty much fortified against us when we got out there. There was a minister of Church of the Four Square Gospel who had been to way fellowships back in, I forget what year it was, but it corresponded to when Craig Martindale was in college. It was the University of Kansas. And this guy was not impressed with the way. Had been to a few twigs, but never took any classes or anything. And when he saw us roll into town, he got on. It was a crusade. There were meetings held against us. There was posters put up about us. We would have people infiltrate our fellowships in acting like they wanted to sign up for the class, but they really were wanting to disrupt things. It was not a lot of fun. Now, one of our regular posters, she wants to somewhat remain anonymous, but my WOW sister is a regular poster on GreaseSpot. We hadn't seen each other for 20 years, and we ended up meeting through GreaseSpot, posting about our WOW years, and we had similar enough stories that we started emailing each other.
I believe I know who that is, yes.
She's a little more concerned about anonymity than I am, so I'm not gonna spill any beans.
Yes. And her name's not Rosie either. So.
Yeah. That's right. But now I spent after the WOW year, I decided to stay in Nebraska. One of the things that was encouraged at the time was to not go back to your home area so that you would be distracted by, you know, your quote-unquote old man habits and all the things that were around before you got into the Word, but stay in your area or maybe go out wild again. And I decided to stay in Nebraska. I lived in Lincoln, the state capital, also a college town, and lived in a way home for a year. Coordinated a twig. And that was somewhat closer to, you know, normal life. You know, had a regular job. People weren't picketing in front of our house like they were in Sydney.
Which is a good thing.
But But spent a year living in Wayhomes. Met my first wife during that year. Got married at the end of that year in '82. And then let's see what else. And then started my first exit from the way, you know, shortly after that, 1983.
Yeah, you had a similar experience as I had with leadership not wanting you to get married, which is very disconcerting, and especially when you decide you're going to go ahead with it anyway. And that always left a really sour taste in my mouth.
Well, that was one of the number of things that I knew was wrong at the time, but just kept on plowing ahead, where we had decided, my first wife and I, that we were going to get married. And the leadership was against it for, I remember some of the reasons, but not all of them, but they didn't think it should happen. I think the main reason was they wanted me to go into the Way Corps. And I talked about going into the Way Corps, and they thought she was being a distraction and a number of other things as well, but they were not for it. And that was one of the things to where I look back now and I think, well, you know, that was a red flag. I mean, I knew there was a problem there. And they popped up pretty regularly when I think about it. From day one, there was red flags, and I just, for one reason or another, I chose to ignore them. And I thought, why? You know, whose business is it whether I get married or not? It's mine and the person I want to get married to. Why are they even concerned about that? But a lot of it was they wanted to control every aspect of your life. And there was greater or lesser extent of that depending on the individual who was leading an area. I mean, not every way leader was out to get their hooks into you and do everything. But there was always a little bit of it. There was always some of that. And some had it more than others. But there was always the idea that you could get involved in somebody's life, that it was acceptable to do so, even if you didn't choose to exercise that as a leader, even if you maybe didn't have the stomach for it, or just wasn't how you wanted to minister to people. There was always that mindset that, boy, if I feel it's justified, I can get involved, and I can tell these people what to do.
That's an interesting observation. You know, a lot of people don't look at it that way, that they could if they wanted to. And many did, many didn't, but that it was almost a normal thing for a leader to think.
And I think that, and again, this is my opinion, I think it goes back to Werewolf. You know, I think that was how he ran the show, and that was how he expected people to act. I mean, there's folks who look at, you know, they look at the Way Corps as being, well, they were good or bad, but boy, PFL was great. And, well, where did it all come from? I mean, where did these attitudes come from? You know, I believe it all goes back to Werewolf. You know, things didn't happen for very long without his blessing.
Yes.
If he wasn't behind it, it didn't stay happening.
Yeah, the whole thing about it's not based on personalities and that. is. I remember hearing that all the time. I was like, going, yes, it is. It very much is.
Well, it shouldn't have been based on personalities. And I think, I know I convinced myself that it wasn't. And a lot of people, I believe, have still convinced themselves that it wasn't. But a lot of what got people interested was the personalities of the people who brought them to the way, or the personality of Werewolf or Martindale or their limb coordinator. Somebody convinced them. And, oh, yeah, it absolutely was personalities. But we often convinced ourselves otherwise that it wasn't. But right about that time, I mean, we got married in August of 82, and sometime in 83, we stopped being involved. And a lot of that was we had a switch of limb coordinators, and this one was just as controlling and just as nosy as the last one. And we decided we just didn't need the grief. My first wife had two kids that I inherited when we got married, and we just wanted to spend more time taking care of her family. But the difference in leaving then and then when I finally left in 2001 was I still retained all the way doctrine. I didn't reject anything I learned in PFAL. I didn't examine it, let alone reject it. I just moved on. I thought, how can I apply what I learned in PFAL while not being part of the Way International on a daily basis? And at this point, the mass exodus that took place in the 80s hadn't taken place yet, so there were very few organized offshoots. You know, Peter Wade has had his thing going down in Australia, I'm sure, at that time. But if there was any offshoots, I certainly didn't know about them. So we just kind of tried to apply what we learned. We would get together, especially when our kids started getting a little older. We'd do speaking in tongues with interpretation at home. We tried to teach our kids the things that we learned in that PFAL class. So we still, you know, we didn't have in our minds, we didn't have a problem with Werewolf. It was just, boy, this Waycor guy, he just overstepped his authority. And we just didn't have the patience to wait it out. You know, there's a lot of people who, they would wait until the next Waycor came in, thinking they would get a better deal. At the time, we just didn't have the patience. And we spent from 83 to 90 not being involved.
Now, did you associate
we had
people that were in at all? Or
leaving for, oh, did I have contact with other people? Yeah. See, at the time, there really wasn't the whole concept of mark and avoid. I mean, I believe it existed for extreme cases, but it wasn't exercised like it was in the 90s and beyond. There were people, there was one woman that stayed active the whole time in the way, and we babysat for her kids. She'd bring her kids over. There was another man who also stayed active, who my ex-wife would do alterations. He had a physical deformity that required that all of his shirts be custom made. And he was active, we weren't. He had no problem coming over to our house and getting his shirts done.
This is where Oakspear picks up where he left off. This is the area where we had the technical difficulties.
Well, we had been out of the way for about 7 years, kind of doing our own thing. We did, however, during this time, this was between 1983 and 1990, in our minds, we still adhere to a lot of the way doctrine. You know, we still believed in the law of believing, speaking in tongues, and there really wasn't anything major that we weren't doing that we were taught in Power for Abundant Living, other than tithing, because there was we didn't really want to send our money to people who weren't having anything to do with us. But right around 1990, we started thinking about whether it would be a good idea to have our kids, who were starting to hit their teens at the time, take the Powerful Abundant Living class. You know, we had made attempts to try to, in a methodical way, try to teach some of the things that we learned in Powerful Abundant Living, but it just didn't seem to be working for one reason or another. During the time, we had stayed in contact with a lot of the folks that we knew in the way. You know, we babysat for some of their kids. My wife at the time used to do alterations on clothes, and she had some customers among some ex-way people. So we stayed in contact, but we didn't really know what was going on in the ministry at large. We didn't know about the whole thing with Chris Gere and the passing of the patriarch and John Lynn and Ralph Stabofsky's paper and all that stuff. We were kind of in the dark on. Well, what we decided to do was, through one of our contacts, get a hold of somebody from who was in a position of leadership in the way. They brought the limb coordinators over to our house, and we sat down with them, and we told them we wanted to get back involved again. Which at the time it struck us as kind of strange, because in the quote unquote good old days, if you could be away forever. If you just showed back up at a fellowship meeting at a twig somewhere, you're just welcome back. But here we were going through this interview process, and we later found out, of course, it was everybody was looking over their shoulders, suspicious about the folks who had gone the way of Chris Gere. There was a lot of paranoia that we only later found out about. But we were cleared, I guess, cleared for entry back into the way for whatever reason. And my oldest son took the Power for Abundant Living class with a bunch of other, as it turned out, children of Power for Abundant Living class grads. And then we just little by little started getting back in. I mean, we thought at first we were just going to have our kids take the class and have some surface involvement, but for some reason we just got sucked back into it, and we started moving into the 90s. And I guess the first thing that we were exposed to, other than Power for Abundant Living, was Martindale had his they were called variously, I think the official name of them was the Leadership Tapes, but they were called by a lot of people the Galatian Tapes, where Martindale tried to explain what he thought happened in the whole Chris Gere situation and the mass exodus that followed that. And a lot of folks have brought up from time to time, how could you have been involved in the way in the 90s? And most of this from people who left either in the wake of passing of the patriarch or shortly before that. Thought it was just insane to be involved in the way in the 90s. And I guess the answer to that was, for us, we didn't know a lot of the stuff that was going on. All we heard was Craig Martindale's side of the story. We did not hear. I mean, the internet was not as available as it is now. You couldn't just log on to Greasepod or Waydale or someplace else and get people's take on things. It was all word of mouth. And frankly, the people who I personally knew who had left the way to either do their own thing or to join an offshoot or what have you, frankly, the people that I knew personally, I didn't put much stock in their opinion. And that was more the roll of the dice than anything. Not that their opinion was bad for leaving. It's just that these were people who I didn't have a high opinion of their opinion to start with. And then I thought, well, these people are leaving and I must be okay to stay, type of thing. So we stuck around. and kind of like the, you know, the frog in the frying pan where the water gets progressively hotter. You know, at first, if some of the things that had been presented to us in the 90s had taken place earlier, we probably never would have got back involved. But everything went in a gradual fashion. And so, you know, we moved into the 90s thinking, you know, it was great to be back in the household and be, you know, be back where, quote unquote, the word was being taught. But little did we know, you know, what was to come, what was ahead.
The whole thing about the paranoia, which seemed to just run amok throughout the ministry, I find that kind of interesting, how that became the pervasive feeling. You know, whether people left or not, it was working on both sides.
Well, one thing, just from my perspective, that the whole paranoia that gripped people was, I think, from both sides of the fence, people looked at people that they would have at one point trusted with their lives, and they felt they were betrayed. You know, those who, Martindale and those who stuck with them, looked at the people who left as traitors. Mm-hmm. And the people who left looked at Martindale and especially and those who followed him as traitors as well, traitors to what they saw as the good name of the ministry, and they felt sold out, I think. And I know from the inside, I mean, the drumbeat was from Martindale was really heavy on these people. Especially leadership had a trust, had betrayed the trust that was given to them, and looking back the other way, people looked at Martindale and thought he had betrayed the trust that had been given him. So you looked at, here's people that we trusted with everything, and look what they did. And so it was real easy to have a real paranoid attitude to where, just because somebody said that they loved God and they were standing with the ministry, you weren't necessarily believed.
Right, right.
That makes sense?
Yeah. It's a good way to put it, too.
And went with that for a while. And then, you know, then we plunged headlong into the 90s.
Getting information was very, very difficult back in those days. I think a lot of people that are growing up with the internet don't realize what a luxury we have today. When you get Passing of the Patriarch and go on the internet and get it really quick.
Oh, yeah. It's even hard for me to believe that just 10 years ago it was so much harder to get information.
Yep.
I'm spoiled by Googling.
Yes, I think we all are.
You know? You know, you actually had to go to the library.
Yes, you did.
But that was 1990. And off we went. And basically through the 90s, things just started to... I don't know if things got worse, or we just started becoming aware of just how bad things were. Because, you know, who wants to admit that they were suckered?
Right.
Who wants to admit that, boy, this thing that I thought was just the Word of God, like it hasn't been taught to since the first century, is not what it was cracked up to be. And, Pseudo mentioned on the round table that we did about when he was at his peak of being in the way. I believe, Lord, I believe. You know, I believe this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that this was the only place where I was going to hear the Word of God accurately taught. And, You know, I didn't do much investigation. You know, I was convinced of that, but I was convinced of it because I hadn't really done any checking. You know, I looked at, well, this church I grew up in didn't really get into too much detail, and this one over here, but how many hundreds of churches and thousands of churches are there out there?
Right.
And, you know, I didn't do my homework. And then it was, you know, you don't want to just give up what you think is, you know, God's will just because you have a bad day or somebody yells at you or something like that. And then it becomes almost like very similar to an abusive relationship where you put up with more and more.
Right.
You put up with more and more interference and more abuse and more nonsense every day because at some point it's worth the trade-off. You've convinced yourself the word that I'm hearing is worth getting yelled at once in a while. The benefits to my life are worth the interference. And, you know, in retrospect, it's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's totally nuts. But when you're in the middle of it, it's kind of hard to say that you just want to give it up. And, you know, I saw some people who got kicked out and marked and avoided, you know, long before I did. And I didn't want to be in that position. I used to get called. Our branch coordinator learned that I was a good note taker. And I don't know where I learned to be a good note taker, but I'm a good note taker. And I can sit there with a notepad and I can give you pretty close to, not a verbatim, but I can get you all the main points in a lecture or teaching or whatever. And he would call me up whenever he would be doing one of his confrontation sessions, and he would have me take notes. And when he thought somebody was contradicting themselves, he would have me read back the notes. And you know, it's, you know, looking back, it's kind of one of the low points. You know, one of the things I'm most ashamed about is being part of all of these mark and avoid sessions, to where, you know, I was using, you know, my abilities, and, you know, I was real good at picking out inconsistencies in what people were saying, and I was sitting in on a lot of these sessions. Not something I'm proud of. You know, I found a few folks and apologized to them. My plumber at work is an ex-way guy who got kicked out the year before I did. You know, every time the toilets are backed up, in he comes.
Because one thing we didn't get into was kind of like life since you've left. You know, I know we did part of it, but obviously everything you go through in life affects you a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And how's your outlook since you left? And I know a lot of stuff that's going on in your life, but whatever you feel like sharing.
Well, the biggest thing since I left, in just in light of everything I've gone through in the way, is that I'm ultra sensitive to anybody who thinks that they have all the answers. And it doesn't have to just be religion. It could be, you know, in the workplace or in personal life. Anybody who has got a point of view where they think that that's the only way it can be, it immediately sets up red flags. Mm-hmm. in my mind. And, you know, I think that's a good thing, that you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me,
right.
Kind of thing. I know I have, my outlook on things has been a lot more broad, and I will entertain ideas from a lot of different areas, simply because I felt with the way we locked ourselves into one way of looking at things, and we had the blinders on in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'll consider pretty much anything. doesn't mean I'm going to go with it, but you know, any kind of religious or philosophical path, I will at least look at it. I'll at least consider it before I decide whether I want to incorporate any of it into how I live my life and how I believe and how I act. I think that's the biggest thing right there. You know, another thing too is, you know, especially in the way in the 90s, it was a very harsh way of living. Very different, I think, from the way of say the 70s, at least on the local level. You know, the way of the 90s was very, very harsh, very confrontational. You didn't witness to people because you loved them. You were confronting the world with the word. And, you know, I saw that kind of attitude creep into the way I treated people. And I've made all kinds of efforts to go the other way, to give people the benefit of the doubt, to you know, to work with people in, you know, in my relationships in a lot more open and understanding manner, mm-hmm. than I ever could have when I was in the way.
Very good. Maybe we'll make a special part three for the ending or something.
Yeah, there you go. One thing I did want to talk about that we didn't really cover.
Okay.
When in the first recording that we did was how powerful abundant living kind of sucked me in, so to speak.
Okay.
I know it was a couple of years ago. When I first got out of the way, I went out to visit my parents, and they had mentioned that they'd seen a lot of change in me when I first got involved in the way, and not for the best in their estimation. And I remember one of my parents, can't remember if it was my mom or dad, saying that they wondered, you know, what is this guy saying that is convincing our son to change everything. And I think one of the things that that sucked people in, and this is outside of whether it was true or not, it was just more, I'm looking at more the methodology that Werewolf used to build his empire, so to speak, was he was very good at getting you to believe what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've gone back over this class. I don't have the books, I don't have my notes and anything anymore, but I started out going into that class very skeptical. Very skeptical of anyone who claimed to have all the answers. But he starts out very simple, with a simple assumption that the Word of God is the will of God. The Bible is in its original form was the revealed Word and will of God without error. And that he starts out by reading some very simple verses, just reading what's written. And contrast that to what some of the things that were taught in the mainstream churches, and shows how, well, I'm reading you right from the Bible. They're kind of making up their own stuff, and little by little, starts to set the groundwork to where he is reliable and he is trustworthy, and what you have been taught in the past was not reliable, mm-hmm. and trustworthy. But it's done on such a simple level to where, you know, I think anybody with a background in actually studying scriptures and biblical languages probably wouldn't have been taken in by it. I think many of us, and myself included, had a desire to know and for answers. We didn't want any wishy-washy equivocations. We wanted the answers. And here's a guy who's saying, hey, I've got answers, mm-hmm. where nobody else did. And as the class progresses, after he sets this groundwork, I mean, it goes on and on for session after session. You know, virtually the first three sessions of the class, he spends a lot of time just saying over and over again, the Word of God is the will of God, the integrity of the Word, and just hammering that. And, you know, eventually it starts morphing into well, what I say about the word is right. And, you know, before you know it, you're accepting things that he says with absolutely no documentation. Because he does such a good job right off the bat of documenting the simple things that he says and the non-controversial things he says. He does an excellent job at documenting that. And then he starts moving into the things where, oh, there was an ancient document that says that 12-year-olds were bar mitzvahed instead of 13-year-olds. And we all nod our heads and say, yeah, that's great. Where there's no, there's nothing to back that up.
Right.
You know, or all the women in the kingdom belong to the king, technically. And there's nothing to back that up. Definitions of Greek words. Now, literals according to usage. As that class goes on, things are more and more, we're basing more and more on what he says and what his opinion is rather than a straight reading of what the Bible says. And you don't even hardly notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get to the end of that class and it ends with that emotional speaking in tongues experience, on some level you're hooked. On some level you're sucked in. And if you started out with a desire to put God first and to learn what God's will really was, then you're in. And you can study and on your own, but most of the answers are already provided for you. And I see the contrast, you know, the way I think now and the way most people on GreaseBot think now, to where we take a critical look at what was in Power for Abundant Living, and maybe we accept it and maybe we don't, and contrast that to some of the people who are still in or still are sympathetic to that whole view of Power for Abundant Living as the best teaching of God's Word out there, where they don't look at it critically, where an argument is settled by, well, it says in the blue book or it says in the green book, rather than any kind of critical thinking. And it's easy to look back when you're out of it, to look back and say, oh yeah, I was sucked in. But when you're in the middle of it, like some of these people still are, it's not quite as easy. Can't see the forest for the trees, or the trees for the forest, whichever one of those that is.
Yeah.
Can't see the acorns for the trees. But The Power for Abundant Living class, I think, was in a lot of ways, true or not, it was a masterwork almost of marketing. Because so many people, at least for a short period of time, and many of us for much longer, were sucked in based on what was in that class. And then, you know, what came after that, so, you know, somewhere along the way, most of us were convinced that this guy, Werwol, knew so much that if we, using his biblical research skills, keys that he taught us, came up with a different answer, well, we just must not be seeing it. We have to hold it in abeyance. We'll see it later. And, you know, to the masses, he presented it in such a grandfatherly, aw shucks manner, that we thought, oh, well, surely we will see it. You know, and his successor, Martindale, you know, didn't have that skill. He called, you know, he said, hey, you dummies, how come you can't see it? And everyone left. You know, we'll convince us.
Right.
By patting us on the head and calling us, you know, good kids, but he was really calling us a dummy just the same way Martindale was.
Yeah, he
you don't
got
see
a better
it.
Way of doing it.
Sure. Yeah, he convinced us we were idiots.
That's a great observation. That really is. I as you were talking, I was thinking about all the different keys and stuff. He really put not redundancy into it, but he put enough stuff into it so that if you didn't come up with his answer, he could point out something as the reason for why you didn't.
Right. Exactly. You know, and when you look at so much of this stuff with a clear eye and a clear mind, some of it's maybe true, but some of it there's just as much of a likelihood that the answer is the other way than what he came up with. And you know, there are so many theologians and so many people studying the Bible out there, and they come up with so many different answers. They're all idiots. They're all possessed. They all have an agenda. I don't know. I think not.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't watch real closely, but I kind of look and see what some of the different offshoots are coming up with, and some of them are going off in very, very different directions, which kind of surprised me. I figured they'd toe the line, but even the ones that still believe in Victor.
Well, one of the things that really got me thinking when I first left the way, I might have still been technically in at the time, I don't recall, but I found, not Christian Family Fellowship, what's the one that Lynn and Sean Hyatt were involved in?
Oh, CES.
Yes. I found their website, and they had a list of all the major areas, and I think it's still on their website, a list of all the major areas where they differ from the Way International and its offshoots. And it was quite a hefty list.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with these conclusions using pretty much the same biblical research keys that Werwolf taught us in Powerful Abundant Living.
Yes.
And yet, you didn't come up with the same answers, you know, and they were being honest. And, you know, then in this next group, they'll come up with something different. And you look at all the different things that we come up with on Greasebot. I mean, just within the realm of believing that the Bible is true and using those research keys, we disagree all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it tells me it's just not as simple as he made it out to be.
Maybe the Bible is all perception-based.
Well, you know, there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you know, when you're told there's only one answer, but yet reasonable minds can come up with more than one, there's something wrong there.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. That's why I enjoy my life now.
Yeah.
Because we can consider those things and not feel guilty about it or get marked and avoided because we think that way.
Well, sure. You know, you can spend your time, you know, just looking at how the world works and how spirituality works, and you can feel free to experiment with things and look at different things without looking over your shoulder and thinking devil spirits are going to jump you, you know, or your fellow twiggers are going to throw you out because you're going into forbidden territory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can learn without being in an atmosphere of fear. And I think that's one of the biggest differences. You know, you asked earlier about my life after the Way International. Looking into things that didn't line up with the Way's interpretation of the Word a lot of times was a fearful thing because you thought, well, I'm reading this, you know, what kind of influencer am I introducing into my mind? And, you know, God forbid somebody else should question you. But, you know, now, you know, I'm free to investigate different things. And if it works for me, it works. If it doesn't work, throw it out. Move on. Throw the baby out with the fish water.
Oh, God.
Well, that's all I got percolating right now.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time, and I'm sorry for the delay. It's been...
No, that's all right.
I feel like I rebuilt a recording studio. I've got two computers up in my room now, and all sorts of wires going back and forth, so...
And do check out Bella Fleck.
I will. In fact, I was writing the name down as you were talking, because I wanted to... All right, then.
All right, well...
Check it out. And thanks again for your time.
All right. See you, Mike.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed this presentation tonight. We will be back with more very soon. This is Pawtucket wishing you well. Good night.